Bye. Good night, everybody.
Happy Thursday, coming to you. A little pre-recorded, of course, from the heart of America. That is the great state of Tennessee. On rumble.com/LFA TV, this is Ungoverned. Good evening to the Captain Screw, the LFA family, the Ungovernables, and, of course, McGroin Nation. Happy and excited to be here on a Thursday. As you know, we are going to be debunking the lies today surrounding January 6th. We have a very special guest. His name is Tim Hale. He is a political prisoner and is going to be sharing the experiences of what he had experienced, of course, as a political prisoner. And, of course, letting you know not to believe everything out there. You know how I am with this. There are a lot of things that come out. Sounds crazy. We're like, oh, I could definitely see them doing it. Yes, of course. I'm not saying it's not possible, but be careful where you get your information and use your noodle. You know that. Use your head. Use your noggin. It's very important that we use our critical thinking skills. And when something seems off, it usually is. We're going to get to all that. We're going to get to the interview with Tim Hale. And I think you are going to enjoy it. He brought a lot of good energy into the interview. As you know, we are pre-recorded today, Thursday. We are on Newsmax with Carl Higbee. We'll be appearing there shortly for the weekly segment Culture Clash with Carl Higbee, Kay Smythe. It's always a good time. Thank you to anybody who watched on WPHT this morning with Caitlin Company. Another show, always a great time. And we were able to blend politics and sports. We talked about that Trevor Bauer situation. Don't stop blowing him up at Bauer Outage on Twitter and Instagram. Let him know that he needs to come on Ungoverned. It'll be really, really fun and great for us, great for him. Before we get to our sponsors, I do want to touch on something very briefly. As you know, I'm very excited about news like this. RFK Jr. has reportedly qualified for the ballot in Michigan. According to the campaign, Kennedy is backed by the Natural Law Party in Michigan, which worked to collect signatures and file paperwork to support his independent White House bid. As you know, that helps Donald Trump. I don't care about anybody who says, well, you know, he wouldn't have won if it wasn't for RFK, if that is indeed what happens. I don't really care. You know that? I want to win the election. I don't care what needs to happen as long as it's within the confines of the law. RFK qualifying for the ballot in Michigan is a huge, huge step towards winning the 2024 election for Donald Trump. Before we get to our interview with Tim Hale, I need to get to a word from our friends over at SwitchTheNumber2USA.com. Take a look at this quick video.
We all want to make a difference in our country and make change, but we don't all have the ability to do so. A lot of people are busy. They can't join school boards. They can't get on borough council, but they can change where they shop. And it's just shopping, it's that simple.
We're gonna link arms and we're gonna shop right here at this American factory. They make the products and they're all natural and they're good for us and they're affordable. Everything's made here in the USA.
That is SwitchTheNumber2USA.com. SwitchTheNumber2USA.com. Ladies and gentlemen, you know how the world has been going crazy with supply chain issues, record-setting inflation, and sky-high gas prices. We all know how the big box stores were allowed to stay open the entire time. While so many little guys, small business owners, and regular people were forced to close, the wealthiest on the planet became better off while mom and pop suffered. But you can vote with your dollars and make a difference. This is a call to action. Switch away from the big box conglomerates and shop factory direct at a family-owned, made-in-America manufacturer. For all your monthly consumables, toothpaste, shaving cream, laundry detergent, shampoo, healthy snacks, and now grass-fed beef, all delivered right to your door. I want you to join the parallel economy that has been formed. Join the massive sweep that is happening through Patriot Nation and decide today that you want to be a part of the movement to cut off their cash flow. Sign up. My friend Maria will give you a call back to enroll you, and then you can start shopping at this privately owned mom and pop. That is SwitchTheNumber2USA.com. SwitchTheNumber2USA.com. That is SwitchTheNumber2USA.com. Next up is the LFA TV store located at the LFA TV website, LFATV.us. You can see it right here on your screen for you. LFATV.us. I've been rocking the LFA TV flannel all week long, and now you can get one for yourself at the LFA TV store located at LFATV.us. Lima Foxtrot Alpha TV. LFA.us. Pick up your LFA TV flannels today. Of course, you can also check out the $10 overstock list, but you see the flannels right here for you on the website. Whole sorts of other, a whole lot of other stuff on the site as well. LFATV.us. Click on the store tab, or you can go directly to the store by going to jeremyherrell.com/store. Without further ado, I want to jump right into this interview with January 6th political prisoner Tim Hale. Please pay attention, please share the show, and please beware and heed the warnings that Tim and I go over towards the end of this interview when it comes to information and narratives surrounding January 6th. Most of it is good stuff, but there are some things that some people are doing that is not good, that is undermining President Trump, and is undermining the true plight of the January 6th political prisoners. Without further ado, here's our interview with J6 political prisoner Tim Hale. All right, on Governor Bill's Captain's Crew, LFA family, McGroin Nation, you know what's going on. I've been telling you about, we're getting back into guests. I've got a January 6th political prisoner. I've been telling you about this for about a week, right, that we're excited to have conversation about. I'm excited to bring him to you. Listen, without further ado, I want to bring you to him right now. This is Tim Hale. He is a January 6th political prisoner, now obviously out of prison, and we're going to get to a wide range of topics today. But Tim, first off, how are you doing?
I'm good. This is what a meritorious occasion to be with such a magnanimous individual. Thank you for having me on, Sean.
Well, you're using words that are too big. I don't understand those, okay? We have huge words, and we have to do little tiny words because we do have some left-wing people who watch the show that need small words. No, it's good to have you on.
Wrong.
Oh, he's trying. He's trying. There it is. He's trying. Be careful. We're going to indict you now for doing that, right? Nobody does the Trump thing. That's what we're going to do. Now you're doing it. Not too bad. We're happy to have you. I'm happy to have this conversation with you. Obviously, it's been in the works for a while. Got everything situated with our interviews. So Tim Hale, January 6th political prisoner. And, you know, I've seen all of this stuff floating around the internet. Everyone loves to make other people feel bad. This is number one thing, right? I hear it all the time. No matter who you talk about, someone's going to come in and start talking smack. Well, the best thing to do if they're going to start talking smack, I say, is to let the person they're talking smack about answer these questions. Now, I saw pictures. I saw comments. Of course, some of these comments came out of the Washington Post. They are comments that I wouldn't qualify with. I wouldn't necessarily say these things. However, there's always another side of the story. I believe in giving everybody their chance to explain themselves. So this picture that came out, and I guess it was in the beginning of the trials and tribulations that you had been going through. Is that really, you know, who you are, or do you have any feelings about that? Would you do it again if it were you? Like, what really happened with this controversial picture and these comments that everybody wants to hear about?
Yeah, all those articles, I did not see that coming. The thing is, so basically what happened was I've basically been an internet troll for like 20 years. And so I was in the military for 12 years. I served the Navy I was in the Army. I served the Navy as a weapons contractor. I had a secret security clearance. I was a union rep for government employees. Basically, you had, after my arrest for January 6th, NCIS, as well as my employers, because keep in mind I was the union rep, and these people didn't really like me because they were management. They basically got my coworkers to say a bunch of stuff about me after my arrest months down the line with these interviews. And so what the feds did was they went to the media and they had basically a bunch of ridiculous things said about me after the fact. This is post hoc. And so they had, the infamous picture or whatever was actually one of a few. But if you looked at all of them, you can clearly see that they're joke pictures. Those pictures were taken a year before January 6th. I did not go to the Capitol goose stepping. All right. I didn't go to the Capitol dressed like Hitler. All right. I went there in a suit and a tie, kind of like this. Right. It was a much better suit. Much better suit. Men's Warehouse, I guarantee it. But so basically that's what they did. They dug through my phone. They did anything they could to make me seem like I was a far right extremist. And this basically was, well, first of all, it's a horrible legal precedent because it had nothing to do with my actual conduct at the Capitol. I went in the Capitol building. I got kicked out. That wasn't worth a 4-year sentence, but we can get into that later. As for like the things about me, half of it's made up. Now, the other half is not exactly nice. But like I said, I was a troll. So, yeah, I mean, I had a small group of friends with a very dark sense of humor. You know, we said bad words. We had offensive memes. You know, at the end of the day, it had nothing to do with anything. If I really was this extremist, I was, 30 years old at the time? I've been working for the government for decades. You don't think that there would this, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, it's kind of like,
yeah,
you know, no red flags before that. So, I mean, basically it was a bunch of hit pieces. And unfortunately, it was the government doing the kind of malicious prosecution that you saw with the Oath Keepers.
Right.
And unfortunately, January 6th is a Trojan horse where you could say pretty much anything. You could take anything out of context. Right. And I mean, they were going back like to when I was a teenager to try to find like juvenile delinquency stuff to try to show that I was a danger to society. I mean, they were really desperate to keep me without bond. Mm-hmm. But no, as I'm not a far right extremist. I'm not a neo-Nazi. I'm not a white supremacist. I'm just a jerk off from New Jersey.
And there's plenty of that in New Jersey. I can say that as a New Yorker.
Right? Right?
And there's plenty, by the way, there's plenty of that in New York too. I mean, just look at what Donald Trump's going through and all these people in the city.
We'll just arrest the whole tri-state area. Everybody's going.
That's what I think. Lock, you know what? Lock. Indict everybody and we'll just clean it up that way. No, you know, I see people posting these things. I see this picture and I'm like, you know, I probably wouldn't do that. But, you know, I don't think it's as extreme as people want to make it out to be. As you said, you were serving and you were a member of the government, you know, working for the government for many, many, many years. I think they might have figured out that you were some sort of, you know, if you were, and you're not, a neo-Nazi, I'm pretty sure it would have taken a little less time than some picture floating around on the internet that that was going around after January 6th. So, you know, I'm glad we got to talk about that just for a second. Again, you know, that's not my kind of humor, but everybody's different.
I gotta say, I got the idea from my sergeant major, too. It's like, I'm sorry, I'm just like,
Then there's that piece of information too. Look, I mean, I obviously don't think you're a bad guy. I know there's a lot of people who do, and some of them are on the left and some of them aren't, but they might as well be. And that's what bothers me the most, you know, for a group of people who want to kind of rally together and unite. We sure love to fight amongst ourselves when we don't have the full story, and it's unfortunate. And we'll get to some of that down the road. Now, you had just mentioned, and I want to get into this. Let's kind of go maybe in order. You had just mentioned that you went into the Capitol building and you were kicked out. Who kicked you out of the Capitol building on January 6th?
It was the Capitol Police. So about a half hour, I spent about a half hour wandering through the Capitol building. I took some selfies with some statues in an area that's called the Crypt. Then I wandered into an area called the Capitol Visitor Center. And basically there was this, it could have been a confrontation. It really didn't end up being that. The Capitol Police came in and they apprehended like two people. And then everyone's like, yo, why are you attacking everybody outside? Because keep in mind, the buildup to people even going inside the building was actually that the cops were attacking the crowd outside. Yep. And we can get into that. Because there's obviously a whole side of January 6th the public doesn't know.
Absolutely.
But inside, the Capitol Police are like, look, we're Trump supporters. We don't want to do what we're doing, but we have a job to do and you guys got to go. And you can actually see on the camera, on the CCTV, we're talking to the cops for like 10 minutes. We're like, there are people hugging the cops and they're like, literally, like you can see me, I'm leaning in because there's so many people. I'm actually trying to like listen to the cops. And of course, you know, back then this is COVID, so people have masks on, so it's hard to hear everybody. But I mean, yeah, like literally we were having a powwow with the cops. And then at the end of it, it's like you can actually see the cops. It's actually kind of like ridiculous because nobody cares about the story. It's actually, I'm not going to say it's touching because that's corny.
Right.
But you can actually see how like both sides reconcile. The cops are like, all right, bring it in. You can literally see a cop go like, come on, let's everybody like, you know. And so it's like it doesn't change everything else that happened that day. And it doesn't, you know, some people got out of control. But for a lot of us, we were just outraged because, one, we had an election stolen. And two, you know, as a citizen, you don't know, like, there were – and again, we can get into this. There were barriers knocked down around the perimeter of the Capitol. We didn't know that.
Right.
Right? So when Ray Epps and all those people did that stuff, that was a half hour before I showed up. And when you're there, I promise you, I posted video from my phone now that I'm out of prison. you just see an ocean of people and they're chanting USA. Right. And you don't know that at the front there are agitators trying to knock stuff over and fight the cops. You just think the cops are attacking First Amendment demonstrators. Mm-hmm. And that like does something to you, especially someone who swears an oath to the country. You know what I'm saying? Like, there were a lot of veterans, there were a lot of first responders, a lot of people that were pissed off.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, and
there's a lot that's lost in translation. And so people went in there. It just wasn't, you know, it is what it is. The opening was there. People went in the building. They wandered around, took selfies, live streamed. And then you see people shaking, you know, hugging the cops and high-fiving and stuff like that. On the east side, the cops waved people in.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like there's no universal experience for anybody. There were a lot of different things going on and a lot of different actors in all of this.
Yep.
And so people don't really know that story. But when the cops told us to leave, they escorted us out. And so when I'm leaving, actually, they've got like this door that I walked in. It's all plugged in, or it's plugged up rather. And so they're like, all right, you guys got to go through the window. And we're like, okay, whatever. This is the same window actually that got broken in. And as we're leaving or trying to leave, the door gets pushed back in. This is where Matthew Perna actually almost gets crushed to death, where the cops are actually, you know, hitting him and, you know, and so like that actually stops a lot of people from leaving. And I've got to say, it's a little interesting. And there are a lot of coincidences on January 6th. It's interesting that as they're about to finish plugging up the breach, the first breach of the Senate wing door area, there's just happens to be a second breach of the Senate wing door area. So I don't know. Part of me thinks that was timed because
it allowed more people into the building and it allowed this whole thing to keep, you know, to keep going essentially. And you mentioned the incident with Matthew Perna and almost getting crushed. And actually when that video was first released and it was, you know, found that he was wearing his red hoodie, we played that several times on this show because we've interviewed Jerry and her story is heartbreaking. I see you're actually wearing the Matthew, is that a Matthew Perna? Is that the pin for him right there? So
it is,
you know,
yes.
And there's an act that they're trying to pass through Congress, and that story is heartbreaking. And you know, we'll get to what led to that in a second. You know, you mentioned that people were being friendly toward the cops. You were recently just on Derek Evans' show, and there's a video of him. He put it up. He fist bumps the police. I mean, this is not a violent guy, and yet yeah. They're coming after people, and it's the full force of the government, right? Did they hold back on you at all? In terms of the legal punishment?
Not at all. And it's, and you know what? It's interesting. It's like, coulda, woulda, shoulda. Like, what would you have done? Like, if they had theoretically given me like misdemeanors or whatever, you never know. Like what, right. I might've like just been like, all right, you're right. But I gotta tell you, the legal system in DC is not like New Jersey. In New Jersey, you know, the government's always trying to get you with something. And it's like, all right, I'll pay a fine at the window or whatever. Have a nice day. Nobody cares. It's a different kind of weaponization, but that's for money, you know. But in D.C., it's like they – for me, let's keep it real. Like I think the insurrection nonsense was planned ahead of time. So I think that they intentionally were looking for any narrative they could push to hurt Trump supporters and to hurt Trump years before the presidential election we're seeing now.
What about the pipe bomb, right? What the pipe bomb? We don't hear about the pipe bomb anymore, but was that like a plan B if there was no breach? You know, were they going to say some extremist tried to take out so-and-so? I mean, there's that too.
There's a body cam I watched, and I post some video of it. I don't have all the audio, unfortunately. There's a guy that's right by the scaffolding where people first went through to get to the Capitol building. He said his name is Eric or whatever, and he's telling the cops that he's going to plant roadside bombs and IEDs for the Capitol Police. He's saying that on body cameras. He's never been charged. If you go on the DOJ website, no one matching his description is there. It's like there were agitators all along the bike rack area and on both sides of the building. So yeah, I have no doubt that there were plants there who were there to exacerbate the situation. And again, there's so many moving parts. You have agitators, there are Antifa. I met some. There are informants. There are people who got caught in drug conspiracies in 2020. Wow. That matter of fact, those are the first defendants who got the 1512 charge first upheld by court in court by the federal judges.
Wow.
And that's the charge being used against Trump now. So federal informants were the first ones to have the 1512 upheld. I mean, this is all planned. This isn't a coincidence. So you had all sorts of moving pieces. So yeah, the pipe bomber thing is just one example. But yeah, I think that there's so much to show coordination inside and outside of the building to show that, yeah, this was something ahead of time. there's this narrative that's, there's the controlled narrative of the, you know, the insurrection narrative. Okay. But then there's also a controlled counter narrative. And so we need to be very careful. This is how Mockingbird stuff works. This is like a Hegelian dialectic where it's like everybody's good or everybody's bad. It's like, no, it's way more complicated than that. There were a lot of suspicious actors that day that were not there for Trump. And they were there to make a lot of stuff happen that would ended up getting a lot of us, you know, in way worse trouble than we needed to be.
Yeah, and so we're Tim Hale, January 6th political prisoner. But you brought it up before. You're talking about suspicious actors now. What do you make? Because you've done a lot of deep dives at Lewis of Monmouth on Twitter. The information that comes from that account is unbelievable. You know, it's very detailed. The receipts are always there. Lewis of Monmouth on Twitter. Or X, whatever the hell you want to call it now. I call it Twitter still because that's just what I am. I'm stubborn.
Tim Hale, criminally funny, J6.
That's it. Yes, the criminally funny. He's criminally funny. That's a interesting take, too. It's actually true. Very true. I will say this. You know, if you don't follow him, you should on Twitter. Take a look at Tim's Twitter feed. But what do you make of Ray Epps? I mean, because I look at this guy. He's telling people to go in. I'm told by mainstream media that's a no-no. And, like, it seems like he's kind of getting off. What do you make of this guy? Is he an informant? Is he a plant? Is he who is he? What is the deal with Ray Epps?
There's no way to know 100%, but in my opinion, it's one of two things. Either he's some sort of government contractor or he's somebody that was basically had some kind of deal where in order to get out of trouble for something or to work off a debt or something like that, he was there as an agitator. But the problem is that Ray Epps was one dude, and there's an army of people there who were doing Ray Epps stuff. And so if you look on the east side, and you can check out Will Pope's page, Free State Will
does a great, a lot of this stuff. Does a tremendous job. Tremendous.
So good. And he's going to win his case. He's going to win. So there's this chick called Megan Paradise, who I think is Adam Carolla's niece. And she's there with a bullhorn, and she's doing the same stuff as Ray Epps. And she's directing people to breach the East Side and the Columbus doors. And so you have a lot of that, and nobody wants to address it. They want to focus just on Ray Epps. But like I said, Ray Epps had teams of people working with him. You see his interactions on the West Side, especially. You know that he has people basically under his command. Now, is he the biggest fish in the pond? I don't think so. But he's a good thing to look at, because, I mean, let's be frank. I've never seen, in the 3 years that I've been going through this, I've never seen the DOJ simp so much for a defendant being smeared.
Yeah. No,
where was that from? You know what I'm saying?
That's like, the red flag, right? I'm like, they're like protecting this guy. You know, he goes on 60 Minutes. I mean, how come, you know, Derek Evans wasn't on a 60 Minutes? Or, you know, Will Pope's not there doing the work that he's done. How come you weren't on 60 Minutes? Like, you know, they give Ray Epps a whole 60 Minutes thing. Everyone's supposed to feel sorry for him. Conservative conspiracy theories that ruined my life. Since when does any of the mainstream media have sympathy for J6ers? I mean, I've never seen it except in the case of Ray Epps. We've seen people, you know, they wiped their rear end with the story of Matthew Perna, which is disgusting. And, you know, and others who were really, I mean, Jordan Meacham, so many stories of suicides in the wake of January 6th. I want to get to something else before we get to 1512. And that is, you know, you had mentioned police essentially attacking or provoking protesters. I think that's something that is underappreciated, not talked about enough. I've seen the story from where they hold the inauguration, that side of the Capitol. And there were people standing there. They're protesting. They're chanting USA. They're singing the national anthem. They're chanting for Trump. And then all of a sudden, you know, stuff starts getting shot into the crowd. And the crowd turns because it's like, what the hell are you doing? Kind of like what you described. You've seen that or are familiar with those experiences, right? Can you expand on that?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, it's important to remember two things, too. There's the Capitol Police and then there's the Metro PD.
Yeah.
Initially, it was the Capitol Police. And to their credit, they weren't as bad as the Metro PD. The Metro PD were very, in my opinion, they were malicious, not just incompetent. I think the Capitol Police were more so incompetent, unprepared. And so there's that. You know, there's the saying, never attribute to malice what you can attribute to stupidity. In this instance, I think that there were a lot of Capitol Police who were just caught off guard, which makes it all the more bizarre that there were like five cops guarding the barriers, you know. But you know, when you really look at things, you realize that, yes, there are agitators who are, you know, trying to escalate things with the cops on one end. And on the other end, you know, you have, like you said, like the cops threw flashbangs in the middle of the crowd. Yep. Like, that's not proper crowd control. You have people who maybe are doing something inappropriate or whatever, like say they're trying to knock a barrier over. It's like, okay, well, spray that guy. Don't spray everyone behind him.
Right.
And so when me and the guys in the DC jail or whatever, like when we're reviewing a lot of video, we find that like four or five agitators basically started the entire riot on the west side. But it doesn't really it's just bizarre. Like it was over the top regardless. Do I think that those agitators were probably there for a reason, if you get what I'm saying? Yeah, sure. But it's almost like it created a window for this snowball effect. Agitator does something to the cop overreacts and attacks the crowd. The crowd gets pissed off and starts going after the cops, rinse and repeat. And that, I think that really is, like, that can summarize it all. But yeah, I mean, you have the cops throwing flashbangs in the middle of the crowd, not at the front.
Yep.
I remember I was hit. I was sprayed. I had flashbangs going on around me. I lost my hearing for a minute, you know, like, and it's like, that really messes with you when you're not, especially when you're not expecting it.
Right.
And so, I mean, you got body cameras. We saw a body camera. The cops were spraying this teenage girl while she was on the ground screaming. You know, you had I'll mention one defendant, for instance, like Jeff McKellop. He's being charged with assault or whatever, but he went after the cops because they body slammed an old woman with a riot shield. And granted, like, okay, they were telling her to get back, whatever, but she's got her hands up in the air. You know, like she's not a threat to anyone. And so it's like, it's really civil disobedience at worst. And she gets body slammed. And this happens more than once. And eventually you got to realize, are there hype men? Are there carnival barkers in there trying to like amp people up? Like, yeah, there are enemies. Let's get them. Like, yeah, that exists.
Of course.
It's like a suspicious amount of it. But also there's the aspect of just like human nature. You're a grown ass man and you're watching American citizens get targeted by their government. And, you know, we need to understand the context of that and also understand that the context was also very fluid for the people on the ground there. So you got people who were never violent in their lives. You got people who served their government. You got, Jeff Sable was a geophysicist. He was wearing a knee brace. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's like something clearly more was going on than meets the eye. So you just see the same 20-second clip of Dominic Pozzola breaking a window for 3 years. You're not really learning what actually happened on the ground.
Right.
And I think that's also why a lot of us were detained without bond, because like I said, I released a lot of video from my phone showing the crowd wasn't doing anything. We were chanting, like you said, USA, or singing God Bless America. And then, but gradually with time, it gets more hostile because we think we're under attack.
Of course.
And again, we don't know we're not allowed to be there.
Right, right.
You know, we think that we're just there for a First Amendment protest. We don't know barriers were knocked over. There's no signs. You can watch videos showing that there was a group of people who tore the signs down that said it was a restricted area.
Right, so there's no way for anybody to know. There's no way for anybody to know, right? You know, if you're coming in after Trump is done speaking or almost done speaking over at the Ellipse and those signs are gone that says it's a restricted area, there's no way that you know or you're even thinking, is this a restricted area? You're seeing barricades, but maybe the barricades were even missing. Some of those came down.
And that's an important part of law, too, especially their common law system, is you have something called mens rea,
which is it's the criminal mind, right? Or the mindset.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, what was the mindset of the person who was doing this? Did someone, you know, there are some statutes where it's like, okay, you're guilty if you just did this, or it's just a matter of an action or whatever. Like in some of like the, I think it was like 40 USC, some of those charges like about just picketing or whatever, maybe those are just whatever. But in terms of like the felony, like the 1512, like you need a corrupt intent. And this is just way over the top. That's why even the language, it goes back to, I'm sure you know, it goes back to the Enron scandal.
Yes.
It has nothing to do with people who wandered into a building. You know what I'm saying?
No, and if anything, like, you know, they talk about, destroying evidence, tampering with witnesses. I mean, did Hillary Clinton not say that she smashed Blackberries with hammers? The January 6th committee not come out and say, oh, yeah, we destroyed all of the evidence from that, you know, all the work from that investigation. I mean, if anything, that more properly fits the statute than somebody entering a building, right? Fits the application of that. Or is Adam Kinzinger, Liz Cheney going to get hit with 1512? You know, I don't know. Now, my question is, were you hit with 1512? Were you one of the people who were actually hit with that charge?
I was eventually, and the funny thing is, like I said, like initially, I just got like crappy little misdemeanors
right.
when they first arrested me. But once the inauguration happened, I got indicted. So I got the 1512 where the Fed started weaponizing that charge. And I had no idea. I'm like, what the hell? Like, what does that even mean? Obstruction of an official proceeding? Like, it just kind of, it seemed like it came out of nowhere. And so, yeah, I got that and I had that hanging over my head for 16 months before I finally got to go to trial. That had a civil disorder charge too, which I don't think that fit at all. But I honestly, I was surprised they dropped that and didn't drop the 1512. I thought the civil disorder was a better fit if they were going to take me to trial for a felony.
Right.
But they ended up dropping that right before my trial. And that's a little sneaky tactic they do where they supersede your indictment because it resets your speedy trial clock. So I'm supposed to get a trial within 70 days or something like that. But instead I go 16 months without a trial because they keep changing my indictment or they keep having the court.
Just to keep restarting your clock.
Yeah, they told my time, so I don't get anything at all. So for the 16 months I was in, I don't think any of that time counted towards my speedy trial clock, a year and a half. So,
did it
and
count
they do
at
that
all?
To a lot of people.
So you spent 16 months in pretrial detention? Is that what I'm hearing?
That's correct.
And how was now, did that count at all as time served for the rest of your sentence?
It did count as time. It did count towards my sentence.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. At least they gave you that. At least they gave you. Now, what was your life like? Pretrial detention. I mean, what was that? Like, what did they do anything to you? Were you restricted from, having certain resources? What were you moved all around the place? Like, because we hear these horror stories. What was life like there? I mean, I think people need to hear it. This is serious. I always say if we don't pay attention to what the government did to J6ers, you're a Bitcoin guy, you're a fitness guy. You think when you start, campaigning to people not to eat crickets as their nutritional thing, they're not going to call you a financial terrorist and start throwing you in jail? They're like, nah, that'll never happen. Oh, they'd never throw peaceful protesters in jail too, right? No, that only happens in Iran. Yeah, but and in the United States of America, J6. What was life like pretrial detention? How did you handle that? I mean, what did you experience?
First off, you better eat those bugs, fascist.
Eatsy bugs.
Anyway, so basically, it was solitary confinement in the sense that it was 23 hours in our cell, 1 hour out of it for, and then eventually it changed to 22 and 2.
Oh, how
so
lucky,
for the first
right?
year,
how lucky.
Yes.
Wow.
So for the first year we were in solitary.
A year? You were in that 23-1 for 12 months?
Yeah.
Holy
yeah.
cow. Okay.
And then eventually, they lightened it up to 5 hours out of our cell, or it might have even been 5.5. So I make this distinction of the different times because there's a lot of atrocity propaganda. And so I think that there were plenty of violations of our civil rights that we can seriously address without lying about it and ended up making everybody look bad by, exaggerating it.
Right.
So one of the things I'll say is that we were denied religious services. We were denied access to our attorneys for a while. We were denied access to evidence. We were denied visitations with our families, and we were denied basic medical care in many instances. So you had a guy named Lonnie Kaufman. He was a 71-year-old Vietnam vet. His hands were purple. He had poor circulation, couldn't get treatment. You had Chris Worrell. He had a form of cancer. He could barely get treatment.
I'm familiar with Chris Worrell. Yeah, that's a terrible story.
I had an ear infection. And even when I was in BOP, I still couldn't get treatment. I couldn't get a furlough so I could see an ear, nose, and throat doctor. Mm. So that eventually cleared up. But so basically, it's like living in a third world country dungeon, something like that. But I will say, one of the worst things, honestly, and nobody wants to hear this, but one of the worst things was some of the people in there with you because they planted agitators with you. So just the whole thing, just all around, it was like living in a gulag. Everybody calls it
the
DC
gulag. Were you in the DC jail? You were in the DC jail, right?
Correct.
How long were you in there?
I was bounced around. I got there, I think it was February 3rd of 2021. Mm-hmm. So I was there almost the entirety of my incarceration before moving to BOP. So I was in a couple jails before that.
What is BOP?
What's that?
What is BOP?
The Bureau of Prisons.
Got it. Okay.
So once you're convicted and sentenced, then you're no longer under the D.C. Department of Corrections. You get moved to the actual federal prison system because you're finally convicted or whatever,
Yep.
It wasn't fun.
Well, I can't imagine it was. I can't imagine it was.
Yeah. It was basically, I always call it a cross between an FBI field office and a mental asylum. Mm. they cleared, one of the guards actually admitted that they cleared the jail out for us weeks before January 6th. And people hear that, like, what the hell? But they said that. And there was no reason for this guard to lie, because he was actually one of the honest ones there. So they knew we would be there. So there was definitely some shenanigans going on. Mm. And it was, like I said, it was like an insane asylum. There were, like, feces, clots of hair jammed into all the corners of the cells. You know, we were segregated from the rest of the jail. Most of the jail is called CDF, Central Detention Facility. We were in CTF, Central Treatment Facility. Mm. So it was for loonies and old people, basically. Wow. And, you know, and so, yeah, I mean, it was isolation, basically. I mean, you could, initially when we first got there, you had an hour to, you know, jump in the shower, make a phone call, and then stare at the wall until you had to go back inside. Mm. And then with time, you had more time out of your cell, sure, but then you're very monitored, and not by the guards and not by the cameras.
Oh, right. Gotcha. Yeah. Now, you know, when you were in BOP, that's Bureau of Prisons now, was it a little different? Was it better? Was it worse? How was that experience after, you know, getting essentially moved out of the D.C. gulag?
It was better in the sense that, like, the people that annoyed you, you could, like, you could get away from them, basically. And you're dealing with, if you're like if you're a solid dude in prison, you generally don't have to deal with, how do I put this? There were a lot. Okay. So I was actually, this might be more specific to me, because I went to a low security prison. So I'm not trying to say that, like, this is Attica or something like that. Like, I went to a Fort Dix prison, FCI Fort Dix. And the situation there is interesting, because there's, and I had no idea, because I worked on Fort Dix in the Army, and there were people were telling me, like, you should get a job there as a security guard. I'm like, oh, cool. It's a white-collar prison, whatever. You think it's, like, tax evasion or something right. like that. It's sex offenders, like, you know, chomos, illegal aliens, and then, you know, drug traffickers and stuff like that. And I'm just like, okay, this is illegal aliens and pedophiles. It doesn't seem like doesn't seem very white-collar, but my bad there. It's disturbing. It's disturbing, actually. Like, but that, I guess that's just the nature of the security level there. So in a sense, it was better because I didn't have Antifa, you know, following me around all day. But on the other hand, I was surrounded by a bunch of sickos.
Right.
The food was better, but I mean, at the end of the day, like, that's a lot of people complain about the food in the DC jail or whatever. But I'm like, that's really not the worst thing there. Jail food is bad in general. Like, the food in Northern Neck, Virginia is actually really bad. Mm. So, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, I guess you have more freedom in prison, you know, and generally people stay in line. But the thing about security in prison is the lower the security, the more people get away with right. and they get too comfortable and they act out of line or whatever. So I'm glad. I mean, yeah, I prefer prison to jail, I guess, but, it's still not exactly fun because but the jail was better in the sense that there were more people that you knew
right.
that you could band together with.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it was like a madhouse. So I was happy to finally get out of there. I just, the only thing that I missed really was just some of the people I was with who had my back.
Right. Now, some of the experiences that you had in the DC jail, and we hear this all the time, and I think there's something up here, you know. How do your experiences compare with that of a Jake Lang? He's all over the place. His name is all over the place. He's probably somebody in prison who's done the most interviews on a podcast I've ever seen. I hear about unfair treatment, and I'm not saying, you just told me how terrible some of the treatment was in the DC gulag, but is it really that bad for him? Is there something up there? I think you've posted a few things. I've kind of started to ask questions. You know, did you have any experiences with him? What's going on there with Jake Lang?
What's going on is something called snitching.
Really?
Yeah. Also, yeah, I mean, he's full of crap. He's a con artist. But, you know, the thing is with that, a lot of the times we got locked down were because of him. You know, I just retweeted something that Jessica Watkins put out. And it's like talking about how a lot of the solitary we endured was because he was always getting us locked down. He would incite riots all the time. You know, the guy's a snake. You know, they call him Jake the Snake. They call him Jake the Fake. But at the end of the day, it's just like he is I genuinely think he's like this Manchurian candidate dude. I think it's like Operation Mockingbird. Mm-hmm. You have a select few people who were in there, these Antifa dudes, who went in there to cause chaos, cause division, and it's basically all they do is, like you just said, do interviews.
And I can't figure out why, you know, you're in a government facility. He's got access to a phone, you know, and this is going on regularly. And I see him going on interviews and shows, people I respect. And I'm like, how come we're not asking how this is so possible? Now, the one thing that I keep hearing about is that you went through pretrial detention. He's gone through, apparently, you know, a lot of that. Is that, but I also heard that he's requesting to stay on pretrial detention. Is that true?
It is true. I mean, look, like I said, it took me 16 months to go to trial.
Right.
But I was constantly pushing for my speedy trial.
Right.
So I did go to trial. And some people had to wait longer or whatever. But, I mean, the dude is not sitting. First of all, why has he been moved over 20 times?
Yeah, that's some strange to me, too. It's like, oh, he disappeared. I'm like, this is like the 40th time he's disappeared. Why does this keep happening? It's like, well, because they're being treated unfairly. And I'm like, they are, but like...
where on earth is Carmen Sandiego?
Right.
You know, it's like,
but
where's
what
he,
is...
Where's he now?
Like, he seems to me like an anomaly, right? Like, if there's anyone that should be doing interviews, and I'm not saying he shouldn't or should or we should be censoring or what, but like, you know, Derek Evans is running for Congress. I hear less about him and more about Jake Lang, because I feel like he's using his position in the jail as some sort of like status symbol to stay relevant and then generate some sort of income or whatever. He's got the website. You can't track the donations. I mean, like, what is happening there? What is going on?
It's multi-pronged. First off, he's making millions of dollars. For years, he's been opening different Gifts and Go accounts, creating fake charities, this, that, and the other thing. Like, I don't know if you know about Bill Shipley. He's this lawyer involved in J6, and he had his artwork stolen for his fundraiser, like straight up lifted.
Wow.
They just changed the name of the website that was on it. So, I mean, this isn't new behavior. That's the first thing, is that it's grifting. I know everybody like uses that word, but it's straight up chicanery. The second is that it's snitching. It is informing. He is an informant. He's a CA, whether he's a CHS or you want to call him something, whatever, I don't care. But he tried to get the Oath Keepers to confess to seditious conspiracy, which is what the feds were charging him with. When he was my cellmate in Virginia, Northern Neck, Virginia jail, I think it's called the Warsaw jail, he was my cellmate, and he spent every night trying to get me to talk about Hitler. It's like, oh, I'm being accused of being an Nazi. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's kind of
kind of obvious, though, at that point.
He spent his whole time trying to sabotage people's cases. And then the third thing is, like I said, I think there is this long game. There is this – the long play is that they want, like – they want people like this to – well, one, it's the insurrection narrative, because if you actually listen to him, he's – you know, he constantly uses language that makes it – basically, it's evocative of – the insurrection narrative, that we were there to fight tyranny, we were going in there to fight the redcoats. It's like, look, a lot of us were reactive, not proactive.
Right.
The CHS, in my case, my roommate, when he wore a wire on me, he asked me, like, yo, what was the plan? What was the goal? I'm like, there wasn't one. They attacked us and we got pissed. You know what I'm saying? But this guy, for 3 years, is still saying that he was there as a revolutionary. That's the insurrection
that
narrative.
That is, yeah. That's the same language that they don't want. You know, that you have to be smart enough not to use that language right now if you really care about, you know, your own well-being.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
that's why for most people they have to take so many things out of context.
Right.
But for this guy, they don't. And I think also a lot of it is the headlines and stuff that he generates. So, you know, whether you want to argue about the context or not, there are so many stories now where he's been criticizing Trump, or he's been saying stuff about Trump going to prison. That's the other thing. It's bad headlines for President Trump. And ultimately, I do think that in the long run, they have this plan where they're going to make him into like this social media influencer, which is what he is, or he claims to be. He's a failed social media influencer. Mm-hmm. He told me when we first met on Con Air that he paid for like 40,000 followers on Instagram. He was really trying to sell us on the idea that he's famous and he's going to be famous.
Doesn't he have like some sort of God complex too? Like, isn't there this whole cult that he has going on in the jail? That's what I've heard of.
I didn't think we were going to address that.
No, because I've heard about it, and I said, this guy goes around apparently calling himself Yeshua. I don't know. I don't think you should be doing that.
Yeah, I mean, he had a cult. It was called the Cult of Israel. When he got moved to, the Lewisburg prison, I think they called it Jake Time. But it was in where we were, it was the Cult of Israel, because he – This is so insane. I can't.
It's crazy.
Believe this, but
no, but I mean, I've heard it, and then you're telling me the same thing. I mean, and you have direct experience. He did these things.
So one of the ways he reels people in, and I hate to insult people for being altruistic, but you have a lot of naive people on the internet, and especially who are very faithful. They see someone who's struggling or claiming to be hurt, and you know, out of the goodness of their heart, they want to like show them support. So you got a lot of people who are very religious, and I think this really basically he puts out like this evangelical message on the internet, and he reels people in. What they don't realize is that he's not actually a Christian. Before he did his cult thing, he would change his religion. One day he'd say he's a Jewish rabbi. The next day he'd say he's a Catholic priest. He's not sincere about it. He once told me that I was evil because as a Catholic, I respect the saints or whatever. He hated Catholics. He used to try to cause religious conflict between Christians and non-Christians. He tried to get us to target Jessica Watkins, who's transgender, and everybody's just like, we're not going to like attack her and shun her and stuff like that. He just tried to cause division. He used to attack Christians and say that Jesus was invented by the Romans. You know, I mean, he's full of crap.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
But he's got every background. He's like Biden. He was raised in the Puerto Rican community and black churches, synagogue, Greek, Irish, Polish, guys, everything. I think the term here, just like Joe Biden, I think it fits based off of what you're telling me. You know, I think it would be appropriate to say con artist, maybe. I think that's what it sounds like.
Absolutely. I told this story on Derek Evans' show. I'll just tell it real quick. He tried to get me because, you know, he steals artwork. So
right? Hunter Biden, too. Listen.
When we got to the D.C. jail, like we finally got these things called entertainment tablets. They're like these black bricks where you can see like these left-wing headlines and stuff like that. So it was this news article from, I think it was CNN, and it was about me with the Hitler mustache. And so Jake, after trying to get me to talk about Hitler the whole time in Virginia, suddenly he does a 180 and he's trying to shun me and get everyone in the jail to hate me for being a supposed Nazi. But then he stops. Suddenly he thinks it's hilarious. And I posted the scans of this because I saved this stuff. He gave me a template for basically Pokemon cards based on January 6th defendants called Patriotmon. And so I was a character called The Stash, and I have these these troll moves and stuff like that. And it's just like, no normal person, and I understand, would believe this stuff if I didn't, I have the scans and I posted them on my Twitter. And it's just insane. Like, he forgot about it. Then he came back and he tried to get me to just take it, get someone else to do it. So he goes to Jessica Watkins. She's an artist. He tries to get her to do it. And then he brings it back to me because she's like, no. And then he leaves it with me. He forgets because he figures out a new scam to do. And so he leaves it with me. So, yeah, I mean, he's absolutely a con artist. I posted a long thread, very long thread. I think it was the day that I don't know how this happened. I think it was General Flynn sang him happy birthday with the Gateway Pundit. I'm like, that day I post basically his entire, 10 years of his chicanery of failed businesses, fake businesses, scams, this, that, and the other thing. I did one of those deep dives that you mentioned.
Yeah.
And I knew a lot of this stuff because he's a sociopath, but he's not smart. And so he's in the unfortunate circumstance of being, a sociopath, but not being actually charismatic and not being intelligent. So what he does is he just tries to buy people off with money or threaten people. But I have a very good memory. And so for a lot of the stuff he's doing, I kind of like just shelve it. And then, and then it is what it is. I was very quiet, like you said. Right. He's doing interviews every day in jail and prison, jail, prison. And I'm just like...
And I'm seeing this and I'm going, I can't... Like Michael Avenatti doesn't even do this many interviews from prison. The guy, Stormy Daniels' lawyer. It's to me, that's a red flag. And I've seen stuff that you're posting, and I've heard from other people too, some of this information about him. And look, I don't want anybody to get the wrong idea here. I'm not trying to attack a J6er or say that, it's not that bad, because we just talked about how bad it was. But what I really want to do is I want to shed light on the people that, questionably you can trust. And I don't think you can trust this person. And now I really especially don't think, after what you told me, that you can trust Jake Lang. Tim, can you tell everybody, because we do have to run, where they can find you, how they can help support you?
Sure. Well, I'm on Twitter. I'm at, like I said, Tim Hale, criminally funny J6er. It's at Lewis of Monmouth. It's kind of a mouthful, one word. But you don't really got to support me. If you want to check out some of the stuff I'm posting, because I got 3 years of receipts of what was really going on behind the scenes, check it out. But if you want to support people, like people who are still rotting behind bars, go to patriotfreedomproject.com. And, you know, just remember, I'm one dude. There's over 1,000 people who've been charged, and you got a lot of people languishing in jail and in prison right now. So just keep those people in mind. Say prayers for them, and also say prayers for President Trump, because like I said, they're using us as a weapon against him.
Yeah.
This is a long game and a long battle. So you know, don't get hoodwinked by all the false narratives, the false messiahs, and the insurrection.
Yeah, no, I couldn't have said it better. Tim Hale, criminally funny, J6er, at Lewis of Monmouth on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it. And of course, a great friend of the show, obviously, PatriotFreedomProject.com. We love Patriot Freedom Project, all the work that they do, and excited to see the work that continues to be done. It's a great organization. Tim Hale, thank you for coming on. We're going to have you back soon. Really appreciate the time.
Thank you. Take his coat.
Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed that interview with January 6th political prisoner Tim Hale. As you heard towards the end of that interview, if you'd like to help January 6th families, you can help the amazing organization, Patriot Freedom Project. That's at patriotfreedomproject.com. You know how much we love PFP over here. Sorry about my voice. I don't know what's going on, but I seem to be losing it again. A little bit of allergies here in Tennessee today. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to talk to you about OFP Farms and their Mother's Day gift box. Folks, OFP Farms, as you know, is a family-owned and operated goat farm producing quality goat milk products for everyday use. Soaps, lotions, lip balms, all-natural pain relief, and beard products. Goat milk is packed naturally with essential vitamins and minerals that help to heal skin and promote regrowth of dead skin cells damaged by everyday life, harsh chemicals, and exposure to the elements. Every product is made with premium ingredients in small batches to maintain quality. OFP Farms is a patriotic, America-first, God-fearing company that creates, produces, and ships directly from their farm. Now you can get yourself and your mom this Mother's Day gift box, folks. It's right here. It is amazing. It's a perfect gift for mom. Right now, they're celebrating moms with an exclusive Mother's Day garden gift box. The luxurious collection is a tribute to express love and appreciation crafted to bring joy and comfort to the amazing women in your life. Be sure to visit their website at ofpfarms.com and browse their selection of products perfect for Mother's Day and every day. Don't forget to use your promo code LFA, Lima Foxtrot Alpha, at checkout for 20% off your purchase and for a limited time only. That is ofpfarms.com, promo code LFA for 20% off. Usually it's 15, right now it's 20. Get that Mother's Day garden gift box right here. It is amazing. It is incredible. The perfect gift for Mother's Day. It's right around the corner. ofpfarms.com, promo code LFA. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed the interview. I hope you took a lot away from that interview. And I hope you understand that at the end of that interview, that was not me or Tim Hale attacking January 6ers. He was making you aware that there's a lot of clickbait. You know I hate that stuff. And a lot of falsehoods surrounding some of the narratives on January 6th from both the left and, of course, members on the right. Be careful where you get your information. Don't believe everything without doing some level of research. Thank you so much for watching and listening today. That was a very important interview, one of my favorite interviews ever, and I hope you can support PatriotFreedomProject.com. Will Johnson coming up next for Culture Wars at 6 p.m. Based America with Drew Hernandez at 7 p.m. Eastern, and of course, Stone Zone with the great Roger Stone at 8 p.m. Eastern. As President Trump says, we will never give up, we will never give in, and we will never, ever surrender. And if all else fails, we will just become ungovernable. Thank you. God bless you. God bless this one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Hit that thumbs up button before you go. Make sure that you share this show with your friends and make sure you are subscribed to our show, Ungoverned, anywhere you get your podcasts, as well as subscribing to this channel, rumble.com/LFATV. Both of those things are completely free. Head over to farishmedia.com. Check out what we have to offer over there. Sign up for our email list. We're looking for a service that is going to do the best bang for buck. For mass emails, we'll be able to start a newsletter there as well. Thank you so much for watching and listening. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, rumble.com/LFATV, with calls in the second half of the show. Have a great rest of your day. We'll catch you tomorrow evening.